Morning, everyone. This is the Wednesday, January 13th, 2021 session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, good morning. Please call the roll.
Good morning, Mayor. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video and channel 30. Public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to conduct the city's business. With that, we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Good morning. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
Thank you. First up is communications.
Request of D. White to address council regarding the Portland Water Bureau and our community's health and welfare. And D. let us know that she is withdrawing her request.
Very good. Next item 21, please.
Request of Lori McFarlane to address council regarding despite Flint, Portland water betrays the public trust and health. And it looks like Lori is not yet connected.
All right, very good. To the consent agenda, have any items been pulled off the consent agenda?
We've had no requests.
Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. We are not yet at the time certain appropriate time. Please call item 25 off the regular agenda.
Appoint Travis Olson to the Floating Structures Code Board of Appeal for term to expire January 12, 2024.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, colleagues, today I'm requesting council confirmation to appoint Travis Olson to the Floating Structures Code Board of Appeal. It is a privilege to recommend such a qualified member in our community to provide guidance on floating structure code appeals to the Bureau of Development Services. Travis Olson is a third generation floating structures builder and co-owner of Ducks Marine Construction. Travis has extensive experience in the construction, reconstruction, and inspection of floating homes and marinas. Terry Whitehill with the Bureau of Development Services is here to address any additional questions. Thank you to Terry and to BDS for a successful recruitment process. So a really long pause here. Is that because I'm now made a motion that we're approving him? Is there a discussion?
If you made a motion, I will second that motion.
Yeah, I move to appoint Travis Olson.
Second.
Structures. Thank you.
Perfect. A motion from Commissioner Ryan to accept the report, a second from Commissioner Hardesty. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you, Travis, for your willingness to serve on this very unique board. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Yeah, thank you, Travis. We're grateful to you for stepping forward, particularly given that this is one of those boards or commissions that actually does require a degree of technical knowledge and expertise. We know you're a busy individual, so we appreciate your willingness to volunteer in this capacity. I'm very happy to support your appointment. I vote aye. The report is accepted. The appointment's approved. Thank you. Next item, 26, please.
Declare the Forest Park Northwest 31st Avenue shed property surplus real property and authorize the Bureau of Parks and Recreation to dispose of the property by sale on the open market.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. Portland Parks and Recreation is currently seeking to dispose of surplus real property, the Northwest 31st Avenue shed property. The unimproved 0.11 acre lot has been part of the city's real property inventory since 1918, when the city acquired the property after the previous owner failed to pay a delinquent assessment. No current, previous, or future use of the property by Portland Parks and Recreation has been identified, thus it has little or no value to Portland Parks and Recreation. In order to dispose of the property through a sale, council must first declare the property surplus property and authorize Portland Parks and Rec to take all steps necessary to sell the property on the open market. So I'll turn it over to F. Dennis James, Portland Parks and Recreation's Property Group Coordinator 2, who will provide us with more context about the project and what this ordinance achieves.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just wanted to indicate, first of all, that the property really has no real value to Portland Parks and Recreation, but it might sell for a significant market price if we're able to go ahead and actually sell the property. Also, as of this juncture, several private properties have already expressed a very real interest in acquiring the property, so actually selling it should not be that difficult. That's it. If anyone has any further questions about the matter, I'll be happy to respond.
I just had one quick question. Is the property already zoned residential, or do they have to rezone it, or depending on rezoning it?
Excuse me. At this point, it's zoned open space. However, that zoning designation was just attached a couple of years ago. For a long time, it had been zoned consistent with the rest of the lots in the area, but through a process that again just culminated a couple of years ago, it was rezoned OS. Although certainly it might take a bit of a process, it very probably can be rezoned back to residential if the party who purchases the lot chooses to do so, which is likely.
When we sell properties like this, I assume we're not making representations, is it? Where is as is?
Yes, yes, that's how we'll typically sell it. We're not going to go through the process of attempting to rezone it ourselves. That's something that the purchaser will take upon themselves to do.
I appreciate that. Commissioner Hardesty has her hand raised.
Thank you, Mayor. And so I'm curious, you say that this property has no value for Portland Parks and Rec. Is it because it is not positioned or appropriate for park activities?
Yes.
And it sounds like it's in the middle of a residential neighborhood?
Yes.
And what has the property been used for in the past?
Nothing. It's simply a empty, open, unimproved lot, and there are neighbors to the north and south of that lot, and over the years, they've simply taken to using it for gardening space.
Just for the sake of the public, how difficult is it to get a zone change on a piece of property after you purchase it?
I'm not competent really to answer that. I do know that I've been involved with a similar process with a different property. And that was something that when we sold the property, it was just assumed that the purchaser would go through that process. This is, as I indicated, it's a little bit unusual because for the longest, the property had been zoned, I believe it is R5. And we took the step, it was about a 5-year process, as a matter of fact, of zoning it OS to make it consistent with typical parks properties. And that designation was just attached, I believe, back in 2018.
So it took parks 5 years to get the zone change. I feel for the public that's going to buy it if we inside City Hall, it took that long. But I have a broader question, and I don't know if I'm put, if I don't want to put you on the spot, Dennis, mm-hmm. but I'm really curious as to, in this economic environment that we're in with this huge houseless population, I'm always fascinated that we sell land that we could actually designate for folks who are houseless in our community. I the last time somebody bought something, a piece of land to sell as excess property, I asked this question, but I don't feel like I got a good answer. So I'm just really curious, as we are addressing our chronic houseless problem, why we would sell land that we could actually utilize to actually have sanctioned camp sites available?
Well, I I'm not sure that I'm competent to answer that question. I will indicate, however, that as part of the city's surplus disposition process, the property is offered to other city agencies at the beginning of the process, and that was done in this instance. And for whatever reasons each agency bureau had, no one expressed an interest in acquiring the property.
Mayor, thank you, Dennis. Mayor, we've had this conversation before. I would be really interested in looking at our requirement to sell excess land, especially during this crisis that we're in. I know that we have passed a resolution that actually requires us to do this, so nothing against Parks and Rec, but it just seems crazy that we have land that we own that we are giving up when we have so many people who are houseless. So I just want to put a stick pin in that and say, can we have that conversation before we get the next offer to sell a piece of property? Because it seems like we should be using all the land that we possibly own to create opportunities for folks who are houseless.
Very good. And the primary city bureaus that own land would be Parks and the Bureau of Transportation. And so maybe if I could suggest that it start with you and Commissioner Rubio, I think it's a very worthy conversation. I agree with you.
I think that's a great idea. We'll connect and try to figure out how we can be proactive about this before the next city council vote. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Huh. Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it. Does that complete the presentation?
I believe so.
All right, good. No other questions that I see right now. Any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up for this item.
Very good. This is an emergency ordinance. Any further discussion? Seeing none, call the roll, please.
Rubio.
So thank you, Dennis, for your work on this project. I'm happy to support this ordinance this time, but also happy to talk to and work with Commissioner Hardesty on that big question, where we should be looking at the city. The declaration on this property is surplus property, just reviewing. So it may be disposed by sale on the open market. So I vote aye.
Ryan?
Yes, thank you, Dennis, for that presentation. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for opening up a thoughtful dialogue. I look for our office would like to just make sure we're in touch when you and Commissioner Rubio have those conversations. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you very much, Dennis, for that very informative conversation. And I'm greatly appreciative of people who speak in front of the council who say, I don't know enough about that. I'm always grateful when people don't try to like answer a question that they don't feel confident in answering. So thank you for modeling the appropriate behavior. If you don't know, you don't know, and it's okay to not know. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next up, we'll go back to the time certain item number 22, please.
Accept the quarterly technology oversight committee report from the chief administrative officer.
Colleagues, the technology oversight committee is a citizen advisory committee that provides oversight for significant City of Portland technology projects. The committee reports to the city council every quarter on the projects that it's currently overseeing. This report covers the activity from October through December of 2020. I'll now turn it over to our presenters. We're joined by Director Jeff Bear from the Bureau of Technology Services. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler. I'm actually going to turn it over to Ethan, who will do the intro for the report.
Great.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning, Mayor Wheeler. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Ethan Sermo. I am part of the OMF communications team. You probably don't recognize me. That's because this is my first time actually in a long time appearing before this council. So hello, my predecessor was Heather Haper, also from the OMF communications team. And then before her was Jen Clodius. We're going to be presenting the fourth quarter report of the Technology Oversight Committee for 2020. You'll be hearing first from Chief Technology Officer Jeff Bear. He is also the Director of the Bureau of Technology Services. After he presents the report to you, you will be hearing from Jimmy Goddard, who is the representative of Commissioner Maps, and he is a committee member. All right, I can run the presentation from my computer here. So Jeff, I can hand it over to you.
Great, thank you, Ethan. And good morning, Mayor Wheeler, members of City Council. As Ethan said, I'm the Director of the Bureau of Technology Services. And with me today is Jimmy Goddard, who will also provide some comments and observations that he has seen from being a participant on the Technology Oversight Committee. So if we can go to the next slide, Ethan. All right, if we can go to slide two. There you go, thank you. So you'll see a very positive assessment of the integrated tax system project. And I just want to say thank you to Revenue Director Thomas Lanham and his team who did a fantastic job in moving this forward despite some very challenging and changing circumstances in last year. But the work that is actually completed now, and we just wrapped up at the end of December, our own internal network engineering team completed their network segmentation for the federal tax information interface for the project. So with that, I'll have brief comments, and then Jimmy, I just want to ask if you want to have some comments or observations from your perspective on the integrated tax system project.
Sure, thank you. Thank you, Ethan, and thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Council. Commissioners, it is a pleasure to represent the Technology Oversight Committee before the Council today. As Jeff mentioned, I'll be providing a very quick updates on the integrated tax systems for the fourth quarter 2020. And as when we review the project with the team, everything was good. The project was the scope, schedule, and budget. Pretty much everything, as you can see on the screen, everything was green. I just wanted to highlight a couple of items. During the fourth quarter, the TOC rated the ITS project only for the month of October. In October, as we reviewed the project was green. We evaluated the first release, which involved stabilization in some of the deliverables. We refer to it by R1, included transition to ongoing operations and support, continued monitoring on the rate of staff adoption. The team also started the second release for the project on September 30th. And that also included items such as a new project team that they were trying to onboard and completion of the program restructure. Now, during the month of November, as the team was in transition from R1 to R2, during that stage, some of the activities were not ready for QA. Therefore, the Technology Oversight Committee did not provide an assessment for the project in the month of November. And in the month of December, we unfortunately did not meet, so we did not conduct any assessment for the project as well. Nonetheless, the project team did release their 90-day post-implementation report. And it was fascinating. It was great news. We were very happy to read the report as the report highlighted how the team overcame significant obstacles during the pandemic in transition to teleworking to go live with only 1 month delay. And the project was on track to complete the remaining of scope with budget by February 2021. And also the identify several lessons learned regarding what worked well during for the project and what they can improve on, which they will be utilizing for planning future rollouts. So some item and criteria we use for the assessment include budget. The project appears to have been established at an adequate level of funding with appropriate contingency. So we do not see from the committee perspective that we need to alarm to have any concerns there. The schedule, ITS was initially scheduled to go live on August 17th. The actual go live end up being September the 14th, 2020. Now, given all that occurred during the project, you have pandemic, furloughs. We all know our city was pretty much on nonstop and with some activities. And also we also did some experience network outages. We believe a transition to a remote working environment midway through a project during testing, even 1 month delay is a very amazing accomplishment. In regards to scope, the scope required by the city was included at go live and several portions of the scope were moved to post go live to reduce risk. And that included the enhanced service districts, the federal taxpayer information, and the Spanish version of Portland Revenue Online. So the vendor is under contract to implement the remaining scope and all the post-go-live scope is on track to be implemented as agreed by both parties. We also had some user adaptation to the new system that went very successfully. In October 2020, the team conducted a formal user adoption that surveyed about 89% of respondents from that survey either agree or mostly agreed that they can use the ITS to perform their jobs, and 89%, that's a very high number. And a follow-up poll was conducted with all staff meeting on October 15, and 37% of the user rating their ability as proficient or super user level. So in summary, I would like to represent our committee to express our gratitude to the team for doing such a great job, and we do not have any concerns at all regarding that project. I also want to highlight another project that we assessed last quarter. It was the pawn and secondhand reporting software. The project description encompasses a request for proposal for implementation of a software system that meet the requirements for a reporting system for secondhand stores. And the estimated annual cost was going to be approximately $65,000. We evaluated and pretty much had some great discussion with Lieutenant Amanda McMillan about the project. And our recommendation, we concluded that the project did not meet the criteria for TOC oversight. We will be more than happy, and we offered our assistance in the development of the RFP the evaluation of the RFP responses and also the contract terms. We also will be available to act in an advisory capacity as needed. Thus complete my overall report of the Technology Oversight Committee to the Council. I would like to say thank you for the opportunity and would like to see if any of you have questions.
Thank you, Jimmy, and appreciate your comments on that. And although we only had one project to report on, we do have several that will be coming up for future TOC consideration. We hope our next quarterly report will include those new projects. And this does conclude our report, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. I just have one question. First, I just want to say it's always fabulous to see only green on a report back that you provide. So that makes my heart chuckle. The next thing I wanted to ask is, how does a project get on your list? We got one coming up, and I want to know, how do I get you fabulous people to make sure that we do it right?
So there's two ways. One is the council can direct a project be overseen by the Technology Oversight Committee, but we do have an internal process for review that we go through and an assessment on risk and different risk levels. And it's a form that the Bureau will fill out. They send it to us. We take a review, and then we do a presentation to the TOC, and then the TOC would be able to say yes or no or some other variation in between.
Excellent. I have a project that we'll be sending your way that I think with your help, I will have much more confidence in it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good, colleagues. Any further questions on this item? I'll entertain a motion.
I move we accept the report as presented.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Hardesty, a second from Commissioner Ryan to accept the report. Any further discussion? Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Thank you, Director Baer and Oversight Committee and staff for all of your thorough work on this report. And I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Director Baer. Thank you, Ethan and Jimmy. It's always good to see you. I was just looking when this was established in 2011, and I'm really grateful we have this system in place. I appreciate Commissioner Hardesty's question. That was the one I had as well, is how do we get in the queue? You know, a Bachelor's of Arts credentialed person like me doesn't need to oversee the details of a technology upgrade. And we all know it can really get us in trouble. So I'm grateful in our government we have this checks and balance, and we have people, volunteers like Jimmy, who put a report together. And yeah, seeing high in confidence and green for budget completion and stability is always satisfying. I was intrigued with where we can improve, so it would be nice to get some details on that, and our office can reach out to you just to see your methodology is why I'd like to see that. Anyway, all that said, I vote aye. Thank you.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Under our unique form of government, it's incumbent upon the City Council to competently manage the city's enterprises, including complex technology projects, such as those that we discussed today. The frank truth is we can't do it without expertise from the community coming to the table and working with us and helping us highlight potential issues. And this is also a tremendously positive example of oversight, transparency, and accountability as far as how we implement technology. I think all of us understand that in both the public and the private sector, large-scale technology implementation programs are fraught with peril. There have been many examples over the years, and it is this committee working alongside our Bureau of Technology Services that helps make sure that we are steered clear of any potential pitfalls on technology. So I really applaud the work that this group is doing. I want to thank you all for your support of our efforts here at the City of Portland, and wish you well in the year ahead. We look forward to the next report. I vote aye. The report is accepted. Thank you all. Next up is item number 27, back on the regular agenda.
Approve application under the multiple unit limited tax exemption program under the inclusionary housing program for Willis Apartments located at 1575 North Willis Boulevard.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, colleagues. The ordinance before us is to consider approving the multi-unit tax exemption for Willis Apartments in North Portland. I will returning this item over to staff for their detailed presentation. Thank you, Dory Van Brockel, from the Housing Bureau for being here. Dory, please take it away.
Good morning, Mayor and members of council. Dory had a small flooding incident at her home due to the weather. And so I am subbing in, and I have the ever capable Cassie Graves, and so I'll do my best.
Matt, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yeah, for the record, Matthew Schaubold, Policy and Planning Manager with the Portland Housing Bureau. And so the plan for today's presentation is to take a few extra minutes to go over a little bit of the background and the structure of the city's inclusionary housing program, given some of our new members of City Council. And so I will go ahead and give an overview of the background and the program, and then Cassie and I will jointly present and answer questions about the Willis Apartments project. So just to kind of set the frame, I know many of you have seen this slide before, but when we're talking about who we're serving in the city of Portland, we use area median income. And this graphic is just to give folks a sense of who we're talking about and what sorts of jobs we're talking about. When we talk about 30% AMI or 30% of the median income or 60% of the median income or 80% of the median income. And so it's just good to kind of ground that because not everybody is as fluent with the affordable housing terminology. So when we look at the city of Portland, and you know, I do want to also caveat this is pre-COVID data. And so while the market is still, you know, in terms of rent, still, you know, fairly constant, we do know there have been some increases and some reductions in rent depending on the area of the city. But as far as where affordability is in the city for 60% median income households, you can see that there's only three neighborhoods that are considered affordable given our last state of housing report. And for 80% median income households, there are more neighborhoods, but still much of the central city and Northeast Portland is not affordable. We also look at affordability by community because we serve many communities across the city. And so this is that same assessment for different communities and what their experience is like in the rental housing market in Portland. It's obvious, but I guess I will flag, you know, we do continue to see that much of the city is not affordable for many of our BIPOC communities, single parents, seniors, immigrants, and a lot of our work is focused on how do we maximize economic inclusiveness in each of Portland's neighborhoods. As far as the inclusionary housing program, the state legislature lifted the preemption on mandatory inclusionary housing in 2016, and the city of Portland pursued developing a program. The state had some policy frameworks that the city had to abide by. The city could not require affordability below 80% of the median income. The city had to provide a fee in lieu option for a developer to be able to pay a fee and get out of the requirement. And the city couldn't apply the requirement to buildings with fewer than 20 units. And so based on a public process with stakeholders and community meetings and a panel of experts, as well as hearings at the Planning and Sustainability Commission and at City Council, the city adopted the program with the policy framework that's outlined on this slide. One of the other requirements in state statute was that the city has to offer incentives and or offsets to developers. And so across the program, across the city provides density and height bonuses. It provides a construction excise tax exemption, system development charge exemptions, property tax exemptions, and parking exemptions or reductions in order to help to offset some of the costs associated with providing regulated affordable units. So in the end, a developer has several options that they can choose from when they are building a project in the city. They can choose to provide affordable units at 60% or 80% of the median income in the new development. They can pay the fee in lieu. They're also able to provide their units, their unit obligation offsite by building new units offsite or dedicating existing units offsite as affordable. The requirements for the number of units or the percent of units is a little bit higher offsite, and they, you know, they have to be within a half mile or the same opportunity score in order to make sure that neighborhood opportunity is the same. And we do have some reasonable equivalency requirements that apply as well. So where are we to date? We're coming up on being 4 years in. The city adopted the program in February of 2017, and we're coming up on February of 2021. So thus far, we have a projected minimum of at least 1,100 regulated affordable housing units that have been produced by the city's inclusionary housing program. And you can see some basic breakdown, and we have more information if folks want it as follow-up. But about 687 units at the 60%, the voluntary 60% AMI level, 384 at the mandatory 80% level, 70 units that are not yet determined because many of these projects are still going through the permitting process. And then just to give council a picture of what the rents look like, you on the right side is a average monthly rent breakdown of a new construction unit versus the average market unit versus the city's regulated 80% and 60% units. And this is a nice map because people like maps of where the buildings are. The buildings are buildings that are actually in permitting or permitted, and the arrows are projects that are in some sort of pre-application, early assistance, or land use review stage. So one thing I do want to mention, because I know in the fall, Commissioner Hardesty and Commissioner Ryan and Mayor Wheeler, we talked about this. There were some concerns, and I think you may see some similar issues or concerns in this project around reasonable equivalency. And so we are in the process, now that we're past the holidays, of updating our administrative rules to increase, to propose changing the administrative rules to increase the reasonable equivalency requirement from 90% of the square footage of the average unit to 95% in response to the feedback we got from City Council in the fall. In addition, there were some concerns that when developers choose to reconfigure their obligation from units into larger bedroom units, we were noticing that some projects had all studios in one bedrooms and then an affordable or two affordable four-bedroom units. And Commissioner Hardesty, I know you in particular had expressed concern. And so we will also be changing our rules to state that in order to be eligible for that reconfiguration option, there has to be at least one market rate unit of two or more bedrooms in order to reconfigure with three bedrooms, and at least one market rate unit with three bedrooms to reconfigure with four. So just in response to the feedback we got from City Council. This process, these will be proposed rule changes, I want to emphasize. We go through a public process when we propose rule changes. It includes a 60-day, at least a 60-day window for public comment, a public hearing. We compile the feedback we've received, and we review that with, obviously, with our director and also the Housing Commissioner, Commissioner Ryan, before any final decisions are made on the updated rules.
Can I stop you, Matt, before you move forward? I have a question about the reconfiguration. I just want to know, is the affordable unit size bedrooms are going to be equivalent to the bedroom size for market rate?
The unit size, we are increasing that reasonable equivalency requirement from 90% to 95%. Currently, there's nothing in our rules or the city's building code or zoning code. There's minimal code guidance as far as how big the bedrooms have to be. We're happy to also, as a part of this process, look at a reasonable equivalency of bedrooms to make sure that we're not having somebody that has a market rate unit with you know, maybe 120 square foot bedrooms, and then the affordable unit with only 70 square foot bedrooms. We can look at that as well, Commissioner.
Yeah, I highly recommend that if you're making changes that you add that, because what we've seen come in front of us has been, in my mind, criminal, and how small those bedrooms are that are supposedly for affordable units. So any changes that actually requires equivalent bedroom size, because the reality is that we should not be reducing the size of the family units for people who are poor, just because they're poor. They should have the exact equal size square footage.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll look at that as a part of the rulemaking process and what's possible in our rules. And we'll follow up.
All right, thank you.
Oh, then, further question? Oh, sorry. Did you have more presentation? I'm sorry, Matt.
No, it's okay, Mayor. Just a quick overview of the project now that I spoke about the program. So just a quick overview of the project. This project is a five-story residential-only property in North Portland. It is a 44-unit apartment building. And so while the obligation for the developer was to only provide around four units at 60%, the developer has opted, based on their business model, to provide all of the units. Regulated at 60% of the median income in exchange for the, you know, various tax and fee and property tax exemptions we're offering. I won't spend too much time on this slide unless there are questions. Again, this is just to give folks a sense of the rent discount. So there is a rent discount for both the studio rents and the three bedroom rents when compared to market rate. We do this test to make sure that the affordability is in fact a discount to the market. And I can say that the rent discount, when you talk about the life of the units, so the 99 years of required affordability, far exceeds the total discounted value for the 10-year property tax exemption. So with that, I am happy to answer any questions.
Callings, any further questions? Is there any public testimony on this item, Keelan?
No one signed up for this item.
This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
I want to thank Matthew for this informative presentation. And I also want to acknowledge the diligent work of the Housing Bureau staff on this project over time. And it's also great to hear about the upcoming changes in an effort to be responsive to our community's needs. We're all very aware of our city's significant affordable housing shortage and our urgency to create more supply. And this point is especially driven home in light of yesterday Hacienda CDC's recent fire, where we really have no units to spare when it comes to availability. And thankfully, all residents are safe, I'm told by Ernesto Fonseca, and in hotels at the moment. So we're glad that things are moving forward there. I'm very supportive of our commitment to work with developers and community-based organizations who are committed to creating more housing for low-income Portlanders. And I appreciate that this project has been considered to afford all 44 units to fit within inclusionary housing. So I hope to continue to see more projects like this and also projects with even deeper affordability to reach communities facing these financial hardships, especially during the pandemic. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Matt, for stepping in and also for giving some context to the program. It's complicated and there are a lot of codes that we manage, and your proposals going forward are strong, and I look forward to partnering with you so that we can maneuver what feels like a lot of challenging restrictions at times to make this, to bring more common sense to this equation. The Willis apartment brings the total number of private sector buildings in the inclusionary housing permit approval pipeline to 111, restricting a minimum of 805 units in an otherwise market rate developments. So we are making progress. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate you putting that PowerPoint together, because I know how difficult it is to track what we do around these affordable housing projects. And I would appreciate you just forwarding that via email so that I'll have it. And I also appreciate the fact that you're looking at being responsive to the concerns that this council has raised about equity around size of units and who gets access to those units. So I strongly encourage you to actually fight and advocate for equity when it comes to sizes of bedrooms, because you're poor doesn't mean you need less space. I'm happy to vote aye for this project and look forward to our continued work to make sure that we are creating units that are safe for low-income people to live in. Thank you.
Maps.
I, like my colleagues, I want to thank Matt for stepping in and giving a great presentation. I'd also like to congratulate all the staff, Commissioner Ryan, and the developers for bringing these new affordable housing units online. It's a real model project. I appreciate your work and look forward to what you have in the pipeline. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. The ordinance is approved. Thank you. Good presentation. Next up, item 28, please.
Authorize new construction financing in an amount not to exceed $17,454,910 for an affordable housing project to be developed by Cathedral Village Partners Limited Partnership or a related Northwest Inc. Catholic Charities affiliate.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, delighted to make this report. The Cathedral Village development is the fourth Portland Housing Bond project that combines Portland Housing Bureau's capital funds with funding for supportive services from the Joint Office for Homeless Services to provide housing for our most vulnerable residents. We want to thank the co-developers, Related Northwest, and Catholic Charities for bringing this project forward to increasing housing opportunities for low-income families and individuals, including communities of color, immigrants and refugees, and people experiencing homelessness during a time of great economic uncertainty. The Cathedral Village project will help to meet the critical needs of residents in St. John's neighborhood of North Portland on a site close to numerous amenities, including the St. John's Farmers Market, full service grocery, transit options, and schools. I will now hand this item over to the staff for presentation. I believe Molly Rogers is here, and take it away, Molly.
Thank you, Commissioners and Mayor Wheeler. For the record, my name is Molly Rogers, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Portland Housing Bureau. I am wanting to make sure the PowerPoint is working here. I am realizing, are you able to see
it?
Yeah,
the screen is up, Molly.
Okay.
It's the first page, I mean, first
Great.
Slide.
I am trying to get inside view, but it's not quite working for me this morning. So I'm going to just proceed with the slides as is. But I'm excited to join you this morning to describe our latest affordable housing project that is going to be funded by the voter-approved Portland Housing Bond called Cathedral Village. I'm joined here today by Steph Condor with Related Northwest and Travis Phillips with Catholic Charities. Since 2017, when the Portland bond went into effect, we have 12 projects with 1,490 units that have been either created or in the process of being created, which is the equivalent of housing over 3,000 people. When complete, these 12 projects will exceed by 15% or 190 units our initial commitment to fund 1,300 affordable housing via the Portland bond, including our additional goals of deeper affordability at 30% of area median income, larger bedroom sizes, and permanent supportive housing. As you can see on the map here, we have affordable housing projects.
Molly, yep. we can't see the map. We just see the first page, you know, introduction. So it's still on the first slide.
Oh, let me try this again, actually.
Sure.
And get to. Get there in just 1 second. My apologies. apologies. Hard to double multitask here.
Everyone's rooting for you. No one's been in your shoes.
And no, we've all been there.
Molly, this is Keelan. If we have staff in the council clerk's office who could help run the slides, if that would be helpful.
That would be very, very helpful. Is there a way?
Keelan?
We could do that. It would be great.
Those tuning in, we're taking a little break, and now we're back.
Yeah, excellent.
And look at that. Something's happening.
Ah, there we go.
I'll go to the second slide with the map.
Ah, right.
There we go. There's our map. So as you can see, we have affordable housing developments funded by the Portland Housing Bond underway in various parts of the city. Cathedral Village is the number 4 project in the corner with a circle around it. 2 projects are already in operations, housing over 700 residents. 2 more have already come to City Council for approval. 1 of those already in construction, and 7 more are slated to come before you throughout 2021. Cathedral Village is the 3rd project to come to Portland City Council for approval from the 2019 bond opportunity solicitation. Approved Cathedral Village's 110 units will move forward towards construction as soon as it financially closes next week. Next slide. Cathedral Village is a 4-story new construction project located at 8614 North Crawford Street, consisting of 110 affordable units. In this schematic, you can see that Cathedral Village will be nestled in the St. John's neighborhood, right tucked in underneath the St. John's Bridge. Related Northwest and Catholic Charities are partnering together to bring this project to fruition. Next slide. 8 of the units are designated as permanent supportive housing intended to serve people who are experiencing homelessness or at risk of homelessness. 37 of the units will be, or 34% of them will be affordable to extremely low income households with incomes at 30% of area median income and below. That is an equivalent of, right now that's $350,000 for a 1-person household. The remaining 73 units will serve households under 60% of area median income and under. Next slide. The project will provide affordable housing for up to 263 people in the 110 across a variety of different bedroom sizes. 56 units or 51% of all the units are family sized as defined as 2 bedrooms or greater, larger bedrooms. So I know some of the commissioners have already mentioned the desire to have larger family bedroom sizes. This particular project is exciting in that we can also offer a number of 3 bedrooms. All the units will be restricted for 99 years for the Portland Housing Bureau with a regulatory agreement that runs concurrently with the 20-year affordability restriction period required by the Portland Housing Bonds. So essentially the bond requirements are just on for the 20 years, but we will continue maintaining that for another 79 years after that as affordable. Cathedral Village will be constructed in accordance to PHB's green building policies and will be Earth Advantage Gold with energy efficient features such as lighting and heating, Energy Star appliances, and durable interior and exterior finishes and materials. The project will also be solar ready and electric vehicle ready. Construction and professional services for this project will meet and exceed the city's goals for the use of the Oregon State Certified Disadvantaged Minority Women Emerging Small Business or Service Disabled Veteran-Owned Businesses, contractors and subcontractors. This project is actually on par to exceed the DMWSB targets and is looking at about 35% for hard construction and exceeding the professional services, getting closer to 30% for those. Our goal is 20%. So they've done an excellent job here. Next slide. Service subsidy for the 8 permanent supportive housing units will come from the Joint Office of Homeless Services. And they're providing 10,000 per household or 80,000 total. Residents in the PSH units will receive case management and peer support through Catholic Charities with a focus on housing stability and retention. They'll also use a housing first model for the PSH residents and pairing that with case management, peer support, mental health, income support, wellness, and social connection. Catholic Charities is also offering financial empowerment, parenting, immigration, legal and counseling services to all residents, as well as their agency's Move-In 101 and Housing 101 curriculum. The Vibe of Portland is also providing on-site music classes for the children and the teens. Next slide. Total PHB construction financing will be up to $17,454,910, and that is leveraging an additional over $20 million in other sources of capital financing, including an Umpqua Bank construction loan that will turn into a permanent loan, low-income housing tax credits offered by the Oregon Housing and Community Services with private equity provided by Redstone. There's also OHCS weatherization funds, the contributions from the developer, and other city exemptions for this project. Interestingly enough, with the recent package from Congress, a part of that package was including a fixed rate for a low-income housing tax credit for the 4% type of equity, and we're actually seeing some cost savings on this project as a result of that. Okay, next slide. So today we're requesting City Council to authorize the amount up to the $17,000 to Cathedral Village, $17 million, Cathedral Village Partners Limited Partnership. But first, I also want to introduce Steph Condor, who's the Vice President of Related Northwest. And she's going to share a few more information about Cathedral Village today.
Thank you, Molly, Mayor Wheeler, and Commissioners. Cathedral Village will mark Related Northwest's third affordable housing development project for the City of Portland. We're really excited to be partnering with Catholic Charities and Vibe PDX. Catholic Charities, as our co-development partner and service provider, brings their long-established local experience as well as their expertise in serving vulnerable populations, BIPOC communities, and families. Along with providing deeply affordable and livable housing to Cathedral Park, St. John's community, as a nod to the neighborhood's history of music with the longest standing jazz festival west of the Mississippi, we're working with Vibe PDX to offer enriched programming for the youth of the residential community with the Music and Arts After School program. We're really proud of this. In addition to our development team, it's complemented by LMC Construction, who's done an excellent job exceeding MWESB participation goals, as well as MWA Architects, a local architect that's well known for designing vibrant housing communities. We're appreciative of the continued support by Portland Housing Bureau and the City of Portland in helping us deliver deeply impactful housing communities like Cathedral Village Apartments projects. So thank you.
Be happy to entertain any questions.
Yep. Good. Colleagues, any questions on this item? Seeing none, Keelan, do we have anybody signed up for public testimony?
Yes, we have one person signed up, Travis Phillips.
Great. Welcome, Travis.
Welcome. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. I just wanted to take a moment to introduce myself, Travis Phillips, Director of Community Development and Housing for Catholic Charities of Oregon. And just wanted to note that we're incredibly excited to work with Steph and Related on this project. In addition to Catholic Charities' portfolio of affordable rental housing across the state of Oregon, and nearly 400 of those units within Portland Housing Bureau's portfolio, we're excited for this development opportunity and excited to provide the services for the residents who will live in these units, including the permanent supportive housing units. Very excited as well for the opportunity to help be a solution to Portland's homeless crisis with those permanent supportive housing units and really building on the work that we're already doing in our portfolio and at Kenton Women's Village, ensuring that these folks have the resources and the support that they need to be stable and to really successfully graduate into permanent housing. So very excited to be part of this project and very excited to be a co-developer and the service provider here. So thanks for considering this today.
Thank you, appreciate it. And that completes public testimony. Any further discussion? This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
I want to thank Molly for this great presentation and also the Portland Housing Bureau team and also especially the developers, Catholic Charity and Related Northwest. I really want to appreciate them for joining forces and making this project a reality, because this is what mission-centered work looks like when we're talking about helping our vulnerable. Community-based organizations and developers focused on creating a path out of homelessness and into a supportive environment are a significant part of our housing solution for the city. And it's heartening to see development projects like this with a mix of multiple and deep affordability that are really built for the families of today. And that moves us forward towards the outcome, and also that are able to center the community's needs first and foremost. So I'm really excited to see also that this project is gold certified and upholds our city's renewable energy goals as well. So congratulations, everyone. I'm really excited to see this project when it's completed. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Molly Rogers. That was an excellent presentation. There's a lot to like about this project, and it's a big step as we're taking as a city to provide affordable family housing. I think the key word for me on this one, I'm sure with all of you, is family. It's great access to James John Elementary School. Then you have on-site music programs. You're next to a park. And we actually have 2 and 3 bedroom units. Imagine that in a decent size. And this is really a big step for sustained housing for families to reduce chronic homelessness. The construction of Cathedral Village keeps us on track to exceed the city's original Portland housing bond goal. This project also comes as a result of a significant collaboration among our funding partners, including the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Thank you to our partners, Related Northwest, Catholic Charities, and all the rest of the development team for your commitment to completing this project and serving the Portland residents who are most in need. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
I also want to thank Molly for that very detailed presentation. Molly, I'd love you to share some information about how this project was able to exceed our goals on minority contracting. It is continues to be a challenge for the city of Portland, and I'm collecting stories of success, so I'd love to actually have more info on how you were able to be so successful. I am excited about this project. The Cathedral Jazz Festival is one of my favorite opportunities most summers. Of course, we haven't had it for a minute, but it will be back. And I'm also very thrilled with the green standards that are being built into this property. I think it's going to be a model for what we do as we continue to build housing that people can afford to live in. I'm happy to vote aye.
Maps.
Like my colleagues, I love this project. It's great to see some of these housing bond dollars get spent and turned into housing that real people can afford. I love the service model here. I'd like to thank staff and our community partners who gave a great presentation and helped make this important project come together. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Yeah, this is great. I want to thank everybody who had a hand in this. It's great to see that at a time when people don't trust government, we're not only doing what we said we would do in terms of providing good stewardship of the Portland Housing Bond, but we are exceeding the promises that were made to the voters who supported this. I vote aye. The ordinance is approved. And believe it or not, our last item for this morning, second reading, item number 29.
authorize a competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder and provide payment for construction of the Northwest Portland Sanitary Sewer Extensions Project Number E11128 for an estimated amount of $1,020,000.
Colleagues, this is the second reading. We've already heard a presentation on this item. We've had opportunity for public input and testimony. Any further discussion on this item? Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
I'm going to vote aye. I also want to thank everyone over at the Bureau of Environmental Services for pulling together this really exciting project that'll make it easier for real everyday Portlanders to upgrade their sewer systems. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. And colleagues, we are adjourned. Thank you all.